Welcome to the very first episode of Loving Angels Instead, the podcast for aspiring angel investors. My name is Mel, and today I will be talking to Melanie Schröder, head of the investment team at APX, and Jörg Reinbold, angel investor and our managing director. Hello, you two.
Hey.
Hello.
I'm very glad you're here. And I'm very glad we're finally starting this podcast. What we're trying to do here, we're trying to give kind of a guideline to people who would like to be angel investors and invest into startups. Melanie, you're our first guest. You have a lot of experience with angel investors because you worked with them a lot in the past years. Maybe you want to explain why and what you did.
Okay, so I'm currently working at APX as Director of Finance and Portfolio. And here I'm in charge of our investment team and our investor network. So meaning we work a lot with angel investors who normally invest in our companies after they finished our 3 months or 100-day program. And before I worked for like 3 years with Axel Springer Plug and Play, so our former accelerator from Axel Springer, and basically did the same there. So we accelerated about 100 companies and they all, or most of them, found an angel investor after being with us. And yeah, I'm currently also still managing director of this company, trying to help the companies to grow even further.
And what you did at Plug and Play is already quite impressive, I'd say. Was it the first accelerator in Germany?
Early, but not the first.
Okay.
But we did a lot. That's, I think, important.
Yeah, yeah.
Melanie
exactly.
And I worked there together, and we did, I think, 102 investments.
Okay, Jörg, let's introduce you as well. You're an angel investor yourself and a founder. You founded Alando, I think, in 1999. And sold it. For a huge sum, very successful. We also found a better place and you angel invested yourself. Do you want to maybe explain what your investments were?
I always, since I started to work basically during university, I started companies or I invested into companies. I only started to invest obviously after I had made some money. And I had a phase in my life that was 8 years long when I spent quite a lot of time with my wife and my kids, where my main job was doing angel investments and investing into 1 to 3 companies per year. And yeah, there I learned a lot about how to select founders I want to work with. And I also learned a lot about what doesn't work and about some things that actually worked.
Melanie, if you had to explain angel investing, if you had to define it, how would you?
Generally, I would say angel investing is an investment into a very early young company from a private person. So different to investment from like an institutional investor, which would be a VC fund or a corporate investor. Angel investment or angel investors are normally private individuals and they are looking for a way to invest money they want to spend and don't want to put in, let's say, real estate or stocks or whatever asset classes exist these days. Another part is that's normally not only the money, they also invest a lot of time, often skills, network to really support the company, not only financially.
Anything to add there, Jörg? What's your definition of angel investing?
Very similar to Melanie's. I think what is important is to differentiate. Some of the angels actually are very structured in their approach and think as structured as Melanie described, where they think in asset classes and portfolio theory. And there are also other angels who just want to invest into startups to give back and who have no clear idea of what they actually want. They obviously all want financial return. But for some of the angels, they are not as structured in their investment approach as others.
Let's imagine I'm a person that doesn't know anything about angel investing, which is true, actually. I don't know much about angel investing.
That's why you are so highly qualified to do this podcast.
Exactly. That's why this is my... Yeah, I'm here also to learn for myself. Maybe I want to angel invest at some point. So imagine I'm a person that doesn't know anything about angel investing. But let's imagine I'm 35. I have a good job. I make about maybe 150K a year. And now I say, okay, I have some money left and I would like to invest.
You shouldn't be an angel, to be honest.
I shouldn't.
No, because I think the money you invest into startups, there's a very high likelihood that you will lose it. So I personally think, but that's something to be discussed. I personally think you should invest money into startups that you actually don't need. So if you have the freedom to invest into the right teams and the right ideas and it works, it's great. But if it doesn't work, which will happen in some cases, you shouldn't be devastated that the money is gone. I personally think you should only invest a fraction of your wealth into angel investments.
What fraction are we talking about? So at what point can I invest?
It really depends how comfortable you feel. If you have a big inheritance and you don't need the money for anything, go for it. In terms of amount, and we see angel investors starting with maybe 10,000 euros in a company. This can go up to 100, 150, a bit more to start would be great. But this is really individual and depends a lot on the company.
Yeah, and I think you should, when you invest like a little bit of money in the beginning, like 10,000 in like an angel syndicate round, you should immediately like earmark some other money you have to be able to follow on if the company becomes successful. Financing rounds happen and you want to put a little bit more money into the company so that you do not dilute too much. So that's also like a next level strategy that when you start to invest into companies, you should not only think about the initial investment you do, but you should also think about what happens if the company actually is a success. And do I want to follow on or do I want to invest and then dilute?
Do I need to be an expert or do I need to know a lot about this industry in order to angel invest? Or can I also, as someone who hasn't had much contact with the startup ecosystem, could I still angel invest successfully?
In my opinion, you can learn a lot about it talking to people. In the end, it's luck. Of course, selecting the company, selecting the founders, you can invest a lot of time and you should. But still, you can have a lucky shot and just give a friend, you know, who has this weird idea, money, and then it turns out to be a big unicorn in the end. To feel comfortable and to make good decisions in a way to say, I thought about a decision and I made a decision because I wanted to do it and not just like invested money. I would really advise to just talk to people, just to maybe go to accelerators where a lot of startups and investors are, go to angel networks, talk to friends you maybe know that invest or friends of friends. When you start a conversation, you will meet a lot of people immediately and they're all quite open to discuss these topics.
Yeah, and then it's, I think, also about the selection, which kind of companies you get the chance to invest into. If you are the only person who wants to invest and this is your first investment ever and you have no clue about the industry they are in, the technologies they are using, it's like not very likely that it's going to work. If other investors also want to invest and if the founders have founded several companies before and they all were a success, then the likelihood is just a little bit higher. And then the challenge is, do you get into the right deals? So that's also like how what Melanie described, start to become part of the networks and learn with others, from others, and don't go alone. Join others and join angel syndicates and angel groups, and there's so many around. Just see that you can join the good deals.
I think this is something very unique about the startup industry as well, that I feel like it's very collaborative and people like to help each other in a way and learn from each other. If we like compare the own expertise versus a network, what would you say has been more important or more valuable? Has maybe the network been even more valuable than actually the
skills? I think it's the mix. For me personally, it's the mix of long-term knowing each other. So when I started in Cologne, the people I then started my company with, I met at university. Then the people I started my next company with, I met at the company before. And the people I started my angel initiatives with, I met through the company I had started. So for me, it was always like networks extending into other networks and then me moving along the paths of the interlocked networks or the overlapping networks, and then always figuring out what I like best. I think that's also most likely the story of, for example, all the successful angel investors. It's always about the network, access to other angels and access to good investment opportunities.
Maybe another way also to think about it is think about your own expertise and skills. So maybe you're good in, I don't know, online marketing, finance. You come from a specific industry and have some good skills you can just give back. And maybe you can become a mentor. And there are a lot of accelerator programs that offer mentorship. There are other ways to get in contact with startups. And then working with the startups, mentoring, like really bringing in your own skills and maybe your own really specific industry network also will help you to really find deals, to assess companies and make a make a better decision. So even though you maybe don't know so much about the startup industry, you still have great skills startups can use, and maybe that could also be an approach to start.
Yeah, and a lot of startups try to create a representative angel network for them, not only to get the money from the angels, but also to get the expertise of the angels. So, for example, when you're very good at brand building, that is something that is very valuable for a lot of companies. So you might be able to enter into very good deals, not only because you have money, because money, a lot of people have money, but also because you are yourself. And the founders like the idea that they have you as a shareholder and have the opportunity to call you and to talk to you without having to pay you. So it's the combination of your expertise, knowledge, network access, plus the money you bring to the table that makes it interesting for the excellent founders trying to get you as an angel.
So let's say I made my first investment and I'm now an angel investor. What are really my responsibilities towards the founders, and how much influence do I have, and maybe even power do I have over the startup? How deep does my influence go?
In my opinion, you should really make sure it's an equal relationship, like on eye level, so to say. Of course, if a startup is super desperate for money, they will give you all the terms, every deal, but then you should be really cautious. On the other hand, if a startup just lets you in and is maybe a bit arrogant already, you also want to think about, is this really the way you want to work? Maybe it makes sense because it's this great deal and then you don't have so much influence and just hope for a big exit. But ideally, it's really on eye level, and then it's your responsibility to work with the startup and to help them as much as you can, as much as you want. And then on the other hand, there's some, I would say, legal responsibilities. So some signatures are required for financing rounds, for the decisions. And then you should make sure that you are available and you're not on the Cayman Islands and only available for signatures once a year. Then, yeah, just make sure you have a representative, you join an angel pool. There are different ways, but I think this is really a big responsibility to be there, be present.
Yeah, I think it's about this healthy relationship that you have to have. If you feel that you should control everything and should manage everything and should approve everything, then you probably shouldn't be the angel, but the CEO or a co-founder. And if you are confident that the founders will do the right thing, because they are the founders, you're just the investor, I think that that's very important. For me, always a healthy relationship is when I don't hear from the startups I'm an angel investor of. Most of the time, I hear from them like once per month when they send me an email or invite me to a telco to tell me how they are doing and the other investors they have. And then sometimes when they know what I'm good at, they call me and ask, can you help us? We have this challenge. We'd love your input. And that, I think, is a healthy relationship. It's also sometimes, I think the balance of the investment needs to be clear. So when you invest as an angel and you invest like 50,000 euros and the startup expects you to work for 2 days per week, then that usually doesn't make sense. So it's more like hours per month that you should deal with the startup as an angel. And there will be like phases where you have more interactions, and there will also be phases where you have very little interaction. And usually, I think in a healthy startup angel relationship, you in the beginning have more time you spend with each other, then hopefully the startup will have further investment rounds and you will still be part of the cap table, you will still be a shareholder, but the like main governance work will be done by the VCs who invest. And you as an angel, you will get the reporting. And from time to time, the founders or their senior leadership team will be in contact with you because they value your opinion or your knowledge in certain areas. That, I think, is a healthy relationship.
Do you think as practice, Kickstarter or platforms like Kickstarter could be a good way to practice small investments?
Or is it completely different? I think that depends. It depends. When you look at Kickstarter, usually you finance products. So you buy something that's not built yet. You don't become a shareholder. So that, I think, is something else. It's like a product financing tool, which I like a lot. The difference between that and an investment into a company is with a Kickstarter investment, you take the risk of the product being built. It does, you know, you're not a shareholder of the company. with an angel investment, you become a shareholder of the company and you have a lot more you have to deal with. With Kickstarter, you can look at products and decide, do I want to buy this before it's made? There's no influence you have on the whole process. When you look at angel investing, they used to be with AngelList. There used to be a network, I think it still exists in the US, where you could join other angel rounds. For example, here in Berlin, there are a lot of informal networks like this, where you can become part of an angel pool and then the investment opportunities get presented to the pool and you can decide if you want to like jump into a deal and then you become part of that. That's the network thing that Melanie and I tried to describe in the beginning.
Are there any other misconceptions that you know of that people have when it comes to angel investing? Like I would have thought, okay, so I'm an angel investor and I will be in contact with like a company at all times and they will ask me for guidance and I will tell them what to do.
Depends. In a good relationship, that will be the case.
I think one would be it's the license to print money, basically. Like I think a lot of people new in this business, they're saying, oh, I invest 100K and I will get my million back in a couple of years for sure. So it's really the opposite, I would say. As Jörg said at the beginning, you should be really ready to lose your money. and also invest ideally not once, invest in a couple of companies because it's just poor math. The likelihood is much higher if you put your money on different horses, so to say, in different companies.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, nice.
Diversify.
Yeah, and that means multiple investments. And that also means that you like need to do a lot and you need to do a lot of investments. And when we look at Axel Springer Plug and Play, we invested into 102 companies and we had so far one that turned into a unicorn and 10 where we think, oh, this might be very interesting what's happening. But the rest of the companies will most likely not be mega successful. And that's okay. To be honest, would we have been able to tell in advance which company would belong to which group? No. Because if we were, we would only have 10 investments or 100, but all of them would turn into unicorns. But then we would probably not do this for anyone, but just for Melanie and Jörg's private empire fund.
It's a good idea.
We shall do that. We'll take Henrik and the rest of the team along and then we'll all be very successful.
What was this one unicorn that you talked about from Plug and Play?
That's N26.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a secret.
Yeah, it's not a secret. I think that's one of the topics of one of the next episodes that we hopefully record is how to select the companies. And they are the proof to us that the team is the most important factor. We always believed in the team.
I would like to introduce one of our first categories in our Angel podcast, the Angel ABC. Did you recognize the melody?
Yes, very nice.
Do you recognize what song it's from?
Yeah, but I don't know the name right now.
The ABC song, I think.
Yeah, exactly. The ABC song. It's the ABC song. Exactly. I had, like, one friend of mine said, showed it to her and she was like, oh yeah, it's Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Yeah, it sounds like, very similar.
It sounds quite similar, yeah. The category that we're talking about is meant to explain a certain term from angel investing, starting from A and then B and then C. Jörg, you're allowed to start with the letter A, and I'm just saying angel does not count. You have to explain something.
So
else.
I have two.
Two. Okay.
One is accountability, because I think when you do an investment as an angel, you really have to understand what you are doing and that you are accountable for what you are doing, not only in the short term, but also in the long term. And you have to make very clear who expects what from whom, like what does the startup expect from you as an angel? What do you expect from the startup? And what do you expect also from, and what is expected from the round of angels investing or the other people investing with you? Which brings me to my second A. The word angel is in it, but it's called angel network, because I personally believe an angel investment in the form of an angel network investment is a lot more valuable to the angel and also to the companies.
Melanie.
I thought about this and we actually talked a bit about this before, but for me, really important part of angel investing is belief. As an angel, you should really believe in the founders as a team, also in the idea, of course, but even more in the team. So really make sure you know the team, you talk to the team, you set expectations, as Jörg said, and you really feel like these are people you want to work with in the long term and be prepared to support them, be willing to open your network for them. And because you have this big belief that you want to support them. And angel investing is not like buying stocks or even investing real estate. This is really personal. You will have great times with the founders. You will have hard times with the founders. Sometimes you will have a hard word with them if something maybe doesn't work out. But so you really should start with a strong belief in the team.
That's a good B.
That was the Angel ABC. I wanted to come back to the belief. Like, you saw a lot of pitches during your time at APX and at Plug and Play. Have you ever seen when a startup pitched that they don't actually really believe in their own idea? Okay, Jörg is Jörg is nodding.
My favorite story of angels not startup founders not believing in their own idea is coming from my personal angel investment time, where I met a team of two founders, where one described the idea in a pitch, and then the other one started his pitch with, "That's obviously not true. He doesn't want to like accept that it's not true. I'll tell you how it is now." And then we stopped the pitch and said, "You should agree on what you want to do, and if you do that, you should come back. Not until then, it's not useful for you and us to spend time with each other."
So he interrupted his own partner.
No, he let him finish because he was quite polite, and they were like super, super highly educated academics with extremely impressive CVs, but they couldn't agree on the basics of their business, and did that in front of potential investors, where we then immediately said, "This doesn't lead anywhere. You should do something else, or you should align on what you want to do, because it doesn't make any sense for you to raise any money, because who would invest into a company where the founders do not align?"
Anything to add?
I think there are two different ways for founders to believe in what they do. One is, I would say, the typical copycat. You see something working in the US and then you bring it to the European market, and you have two strong, often business founders who really believe this can work. They believe this works here, and they do. It could be any industry, any product, doesn't really matter. And another belief we see a lot is this really belief from the heart. So like, founders doing something they're super passionate about, something maybe from former experience, something to solve a personal problem in the family. And this is another way of believing in something. And you can really see the difference in founders. I don't want to say in terms of success that one is more successful than the others. Maybe if you're looking for founders who are in there for the long term, they will also go through when it's getting hard, maybe. Then maybe the ones that are in there much more with passion and their heart, they are more likely to stay for longer, sometimes even too long. So we have to say to them, "It's over, guys or girls. You have to stop now."
To recognize the horse is dead.
Yeah.
Get off it.
But yeah, I think it's just two different ways of believing, and something we can really talk about when we talk about selecting companies in a later point.
There's also another belief thing. There's like a very like a blurry zone between believing and being convinced and reality distortion fields. And founders sometimes believe so hard in the world that they want to create that they are already in the world, and they lose a little bit the connection to the world we are in. But that's also something we can talk about in the episode when we talk about how to select.
We will, for sure. What do you think is worse? So you talked about the copycat. Melanie and Jörg, you talked about believing in a vision, like a rather crazy vision, let's say. What's worse or better? Having a company that where you say, "Oh, well, this has kind of technically been done before, just slightly different." Is that better? Or, "Wow, this is completely nuts. How is this ever going to work?"
In my experience, it's the likelihood that you can execute something that has been executed before is a different and maybe has a higher likelihood than that something extremely new will work. But still, the extremely new things, they might lead to extreme innovation, which might become very, very valuable. When you look at Facebook, for example, or
TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok.
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 What's up with TikTok? Like, I read about this and I was completely stunned that, I don't know, this actually works. I feel like this has also been there before.
Yeah, but this time, timing was right. Timing was right. Kids had all the devices they needed to use it. And then, for me, the very interesting question now is, will this be how sustainable will TikTok be?
I feel like it's going to be the same as it was with Vine. It's probably just a trend. I mean, Vine took, I don't know, a few years.
From an angel's perspective, like when you invest into something like this very, very early and you are with it when it starts and then it goes viral and then it does like the first investment round, then it gets bought or integrated from someone big, then you are already out and you have made a lot of money and then it becomes like super global. And maybe you are still in with a little bit of shares and then you will sell them as well. So from like an early investor, sometimes you are part of the story even before it's a global phenomenon. You're part of the story when it's small to large, but not global.
So whoever, I don't really know who was it, but whoever invested into Musical.ly, which is now TikTok basically, because they were bought. I mean, for them it was great. And even if they didn't believe in it in the beginning, and maybe even if TikTok won't work out in the long term, they made a good deal.
Yeah, fine.
Okay, and the reason why you can't basically stay with a company forever is because the shares simply get too expensive.
Yeah, or someone offers you money for your shares and you're like, what? This much? Cool. I'll sell.
Has this happened to you?
Yeah, luckily, yes. That's why I can do angel investments.
Was that Zalando?
Zalando was one case, and there were also other cases where I invested very early and then someone thought that the company makes more sense in another context and they bought shares. Or I did secondary sales when like very large private equity funds invested into, so for example, Smava. I was one of the co-founders of Smava. It's like a financial services company. They did a large financing round last year. And in that large financing round, the biggest investor said, we want to clean up the cap table. That was for them like a hygiene factor. And cleaning up the cap table meant, let's get rid of the angels. And they said, getting rid of them is quite easy. We just need to give them money. So they offered a very nice price for the shares. And then we sold.
I know that you have many, many interesting stories to tell when it comes to angel investing. So in the next episodes that will hopefully follow, and I'm sure they will follow, we're going to get deeper into that topic. I think we're done for today. We're done for now with the first episode. Thank you too very much for joining. The next episode, we're going to get more deeply into the actual process of becoming an angel. Now we kind of discuss what it actually is, and what angel investing means. And then next time we should get into the selection process or the networking to actually get tips for starting. All right. Thank you very much both for joining.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And to our listeners, thank you very much for joining as well. And we will hopefully hear each other next time.